Japanese knives are revered in the culinary world. They're the equivalent of a good sports car, and while a bit cheaper than a Porsche, they are not cheap. It makes sense that pros would make the investment, but what about those of us who simply love to cook? Worth it? Well, it's a complicated subject, so managing producer Sally Swift turned to a man who loves to take on complicated culinary subjects, David Rosengarten of the Rosengarten Report.
Hey, David, nice to have you back.
Hi, Sally. Good to be here.
So I want to talk about Japanese knives today. What actually makes a knife Japanese?
You know, that once upon a time, that was a very easy question. And the answer was, if it was made in Japan. Because, you know, 200 years ago, there were only three types of knives that were made in Japan. And each one had its own role in the kitchen. The classic Japanese prescription was one knife, one job. Generally speaking, these knives, always then and now, are more lightweight than Western knives, usually a thinner edge, better sharpening, holding that sharpness and that edge better. And in cutting food, you typically in Japanese knives didn't have as much crushing of the food as you might have with a heavier Western knife. And if you crush the food, you're going to oxidize it and you're going to end up with different textures and flavors. So it was very easy. You know, 1840, what's a Japanese knife? One of the three classic types made in Japan. That was it. Mm-hmm. But then the world changed with the arrival of, among others, Americans. American warships showed up in Yokohama in 1853, and as you know, Japan was opened. Before that time, the Japanese only ate fish and vegetables, and these three knives were tailored for just fish and vegetable jobs. There were religious reasons why they didn't eat meat. But when those warlike Americans in the warships got there, they observed that Americans were eating meat. And it started to grow in interest and popularity. And then we reached this incredible moment in 1872 when the Emperor of Japan ate meat in public.
Oh, no.
And started to advocate the eating of meat. He said, as a nation, we need to get bigger and healthier and stronger. And they started to eat meat at that time. And what happened was the knives changed because the three classic types from before, they were never meant to cut meat. One of the changes that's involved is a Japanese knife traditionally, and still today, traditional ones, they have what's called a single bevel, but the single bevel knife doesn't cut meat as well. So they developed a double bevel, a bevel on each side. So that's one way in which Japanese knives changed. And then also, in the 20th century, Western chefs all over the place started to notice these Japanese knives, and the Japanese artisans started to make knives for the Western kitchen. And this is about the time in the 1920s when the runaway successful international Japanese knife was formed, and that was the Santoku. I'd say most people who have a Japanese knife today in their kitchens in America, restaurant or home, they have a Santoku, which was developed to do the things that all three of the former knives did, plus meat. It means something like three together or everything together, but that's what a Santoku is.
So what should you look for when you're buying one?
It's good to start thinking about the task. My favorite traditional Japanese knife, because I bought one, it's called a Yanagi. And you know when you go to the sushi bar and you're sitting there and the guy is beautifully slicing your sashimi with a long knife?
Yep.
That's a Yanagi. It's got the bevel on one side. Now, the problem with the bevel on one side is, did you ever cut something with a knife, like you're cutting an onion, and you find that the knife starts to go in its own direction?
Yes.
Like it's not that easy to control?
Yes.
That is much more likely to happen with a single bevel. However, a single bevel can get a much sharper hone on it. So that's why single bevel is good. Anyway, the Yanagi, the long sushi bar knife, always has a single bevel. And when you watch those beautifully trained sushi chefs behind the bar, let's say he's got a big slab of yellowtail. And what he does is he takes the heel of that long knife, the part that's near the handle, and he puts it up towards the, let's say, the top edge of the fish, and then he draws it through once. Does not saw back and forth. And what comes off is this glossy, super smooth surface that certainly changes the texture of your slice of sashimi, but many people claim that it even changes the flavor of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not as fishy, not as much oil released.
So there's a precision with the blade, essentially.
Exactly. And if somebody has occasion to slice raw fish or other things, I use my unagi to slice meat. If you can do that, you know, they're quite expensive, but that to me is the number one Japanese knife. Two other classic types are the Diba knife, which is a knife that is designed for boning fish, cutting their heads off, getting around the hard stuff that's, you know, at the gill and the tail. And then the other classic knife is the Usuba, which kind of looks like a cleaver. It's got a rectangular kind of look. But that's pretty much the lineup, and people all over the place are making hundreds of variations on these basic types of Japanese knives. And it's no longer the case that a Japanese knife comes from Japan. There's a guy in Oregon who's making beautiful Japanese knives. In Germany, Wusthof is making Japanese knives. And, you know, if you buy a good one, you're certainly going to get one that is thinner and sharper than other knives. They keep their edge pretty well. And, you know, you sharpen a Japanese knife on a whetstone, and that's a whole thing in itself. There are plenty of whetstone sharpening moments on YouTube and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you don't have to, you know how a French chef, he's in the kitchen, right? He's got the sharpening steel and he's got the chef's knife. And usually before most tasks, it's like doing the sharpening before cutting, like maybe several times a day. You don't have to do that with a Japanese knife. So that's one thing that's nice about it.
Wow, David, that's a lot to know. Thanks for straightening us out.
My pleasure. Thanks, Sally.
David Rosengarten is the man behind the Rosengarten Report. Sally Swift is co-host with Patty Hinnich of the podcast Big Appetites.